This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Mellor. And the White Sox, it felt like they were on the precipice of disaster this week as they track through the AL East, but it's turned completely around. They're on a three-game winning streak after a 6-1 win over Tampa Bay yesterday. And it shows the grit of this White Sox team. And I'll tell you why. The White Sox on Wednesday were staring down their third straight loss to the New York Yankees. And the Yankees are tough. We get it. They're a good baseball team. They're going to be in the playoffs this year. They're solidly in a wild card spot, and they're still trying to track down Tampa Bay for that AL East lead and potentially the one seed in the American League. And the White Sox were staring down three losses in a row. The Guardians were winning. They would have been a game and a half back had the White Sox dropped that game. And they were down 4-1 heading into the eighth inning. 4-0 early, 4-1 heading into the eighth inning. And everything turned around in that eighth inning when Sam Antonacci stepped to the plate with a runner on base.
The pitch. Swinging a high fly ball out into right. In the corner, gone! It's a one-run game.
So that brings it to a one-run game, as you heard Len say there on Wednesday. And then Munetaka Murakami, the very next batter, as well.
4-3 Yankees. There's a fly ball. Well hit out into left center field. And it is gone! We are tied!
Don't ever leave early.
And that's where it turned on its head. Edgar Carroll later in that game had the walk-off hit in the 11th inning.
A pitch to Edgar. Swing and a pop fly, shallow center field. It drops down. Here comes Peters. Throw to the plate late. Sox win. Edgar Carroll comes through in the 12th. 6-5 the final.
Got mixed up. That was in the 12th inning. The very next day, the White Sox were also in extra innings as well. They would win that game as well on a walk-off walk from Tristan Peters. But and they haven't lost since. They beat Tampa Bay again last night. And White Sox fans, ring us up 312-332-3776 because I think somewhat a little bit a theme of this season has been it's been asking the question. When is reality going to set in for this team and they are going to take a step back? But then as soon as it feels like that might happen, this team that's on somewhat of a magical run that's been the surprise in all of baseball that has shown they don't give up, they don't quit, they continue to win, bounces back and goes and wins baseball games. And they make miracle comebacks like they did on Wednesday, a game that really they had no business being in. They showed they could go out and win a game against the best pitcher in baseball. Cam Schlittler is running away with the AL Cy Young right now. And the White Sox beat him. Yeah, they didn't score against him. They scored later. They scored against the Yankees bullpen. But sometimes that's what you have to do to win baseball games. And they showed they have the pop to get back into late games. They showed they have the don't quit, the never give up. That has been kind of the MO of this team the entire season. And White Sox fans, you should be excited right now about this ball club. I mean, frankly, I think we all are because of what we've seen so far this season. But every time they are in a prove it situation, they continue to prove it. The stretch the White Sox are on right now is one of the toughest stretches you're going to see in the major leagues. The Tampa Bay Rays came into this series 20 games above 500. They are arguably, other than the Dodgers, the best team in baseball right now. Brewers might have something to say about that too. And maybe the Braves, but for the most part in the American League, they're the class. And the White Sox went in yesterday and made Nick Martinez, who's one of their best pitchers, who will be pitching in a playoff game, they made him look amateurish. Miguel Vargas homered. Munetaka Murakami homered. Colson Montgomery homered late. Andrew Benintendi homered. Four of your first five hitters all once again showed that they can compete with top pitching at the top of the American League. And the White Sox extend their lead in the division, and it's not comfortable yet, but it's more comfortable than it has been. I mean, the Sox were staring down on Wednesday being just three games over 500. Cleveland was on their tails. White Sox haven't given up that division lead since July 4th. And Cleveland was creeping up. White Sox had a tough schedule. Could Cleveland make a move here? And the White Sox still held them off. And they're going through this stretch. They've played five games now. They're halfway through their AL East stretch. Talked about Tampa Bay. The New York Yankees are just 2.5 games behind them. They're 62-48. They're one of the best teams in baseball. They are going to be a contender in October. They have a great pitching staff. The White Sox saw three of their top pitchers. They saw Max Fried. They saw Cam Schlittler. They went out and beat Cam Schlittler. They saw Gerrit Cole. Now, they didn't beat Gerrit Cole, but they kept it close. They lost 3-2. They had a chance in the ninth inning. It's a team that doesn't quit. It's a team that, when the wheels look like they are going to fall off, they get right back on track. And I think that's the reason why, at points, it feels like, they still need to prove it. The wheels are going to fall off is because they're such a young team. And that's what happens to young teams. But Will Venable has done such a good job in this clubhouse. And the players themselves have shown that they have the thick skin and wherewithal that it's not something that affects them. They have the Red Sox coming up after Tampa Bay. They still have two more versus Tampa Bay, and it's going to be tough to win these next two, especially at Tropicana Field coming off of last night. The Red Sox are in a wild card spot as well at 58-51, but the White Sox are rolling. Having won three in a row right now, and the power is showing based on what they did last night. Mentioned the White Sox extended their lead in the division. Yesterday, the Cleveland Guardians lost. Tanner Bibee was throwing an absolute gem for Cleveland, but they blew it late, and they lost 4-1 to the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Minnesota Twins, they won last night. So they're now also three games back of the Cleveland Guardians. They made a couple of moves heading up to the trade deadline here that I think shows the Twins are going to be buyers at this deadline rather than standing pat, even though they're just one game above 500. So that's a team to keep an eye on as well. But the White Sox do extend their lead last night to three games in the division. They're one of the top two teams in the American League by seeding. They're in position for a bye right now. And with the trade deadline coming up, I mean, the world is their oyster. We'll see what they do. We'll talk to Jesse Rogers coming up. That's going to be at 1 p.m. He'll give us all the trade deadline prep that we need to know for the Chicago White Sox. Are they going to go get a star pitcher? Do they not need a star pitcher? Are they going to go for a guy who's a little bit more controllable? What about the catcher position? We'll ask Jesse all that at 1 p.m. Scott Merkin is going to join us at 2 p.m. to talk about the team's success in this past series against the New York Yankees and how they're continuing the success against the Tampa Bay Rays. And also, there was a moment in last night's game that was frankly hilarious, and it was in our broadcast booth. So we're going to hit on all of that today. We're going to take a quick break, and there have been a lot of players that have stepped up this season for the Chicago White Sox. And one of them has stepped up recently, and he's going to be extremely important down the stretch. I want to ask you, White Sox fans, if you're comfortable with him starting game one for the Chicago White Sox. Is the game one playoff starting pitcher already on the roster. 312-332-3776. What do you think? Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly.
Carmen and Yurko, weekdays, 9 to noon, ESPN Chicago.
Gets it done here without any drama. 1-2. Nice catch.
We're safe. Sorry for the dead air.
That one was coming right in my face.
Oh.
Nice catch.
Well, thank you.
I wish I'd seen it. I'm stuck it out of the way.
Man down.
Two balls, two strikes.
I think I saw your feet up above the desk.
Popped up. Vargas on the left side is under it, and he's got it.
I got to tell you, that's like,
you know, I'm calling the play-by-play. You're just sitting over there, do-do-do-do-do. Oh, I'll catch it. I'm trying to do seven things at once here, so catching a foul ball is not on my list.
Let's just say this. It's the first time in forever, like, one was just chest-high right at us. And, like, all the rest have been difficult.
Well, nice catch, DJ. Last night at Tropicana Field, ball went into the broadcast booth. That was in the ninth inning, and Darren Jackson caught it. Well, and obviously, you heard in the clip, dove out of the way. I mean, Darren Jackson's the former Major League Baseball player. You expect him to be the one to catch the baseball. They'll be back in the booth today. You'll hear from them at around 3 o'clock, 3:10 first pitch between the White Sox and Tampa Bay Rays. Tampa Bay Rays mentioned it. They're the best team in the American League right now, but the White Sox knocked them off last night 6-1. Keep the momentum rolling. And I mentioned there's a lot of players on this team that have stepped up this season. And one of them who's been electric recently is Sean Burke. Sean Burke, the starting pitcher, went out against the Yankees on Thursday and pitched a gem. Six innings, no earned runs, 10 strikeouts, and just 3 hits. In the month of July, Sean Burke's ERA is the second lowest in the major leagues out of all qualified pitchers. Just a 1.14 ERA. Since his first start of the month on July 4th, he's been great. And my question for you, White Sox fans, with the trade deadline coming up, are you okay with Sean Burke being your number one starter? And are you okay with Davis Martin being your number two starter at this point of the season? Or do you need some type of big name to take over that mantle at the trade deadline? What's your comfortability? 312-332-3776. Going through Sean Burke's last few games here. Just going through the game log. So last week, Sean Burke has that 6 innings, 0 earned runs, 10 strikeout game. Week before that, start before that, against Houston, 6 innings pitched, 10 strikeouts, just 4 hits, 2 earned runs. Game before that against Toronto, a win for the White Sox, 3-0, because Sean Burke, once again, 6 2/3, pitched into the 7th inning, no earned runs, 5 strikeouts. Game before that, another win for the White Sox. 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 9 strikeouts. Game before that, 6 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 11 strikeouts. Win for the White Sox. The White Sox have won 4 of the last 5 games that Sean Burke has pitched. Davis Martin was the revelation early for the White Sox as a starting pitcher. Lately, though, it's been Sean Burke. And the way he's throwing right now, and Will Venable, they asked him in one of his post-game media sessions after Sean Burke's start, they said, well, what's going on with Sean Burke? He discussed the fastball, and he said the fastball placement, the location, has been really, really good recently, and the numbers show it. The White Sox have a guy right now in Sean Burke who's top 10 in Major League Baseball among qualified pitchers in ERA with a 3.04 ERA. 3.8 wins above replacement, 7-5 record, but some of that he's just gotten unlucky. And recently it's been even better than that. Once again, 1.14 ERA in the month of July. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball. Second among all qualified pitchers other than Dylan Cease, who's been the best pitcher in baseball in that stretch. And I think at this point, if the White Sox don't go out and get a superstar pitcher, like, they're not going to get Skubal, but even, say, a Freddie Peralta, who hasn't been great this year, but in the past has shown he can be a number one, even if they do get a Freddie Peralta, I think I'm good with Sean Burke being a game one starter in the playoffs. He's continued to show that he can go out against big-time lineups. I know the New York Yankees didn't have Judge and they didn't have Bellinger in the lineup, but that's still one of the best offenses in baseball. I'm okay with him going out there and being the top guy. He's shown against high competition that he can go out and pitch well. He's shown against high competition that he can pitch deep into games. He hasn't had a game recently where he goes under six innings. And all of that proves to me, and the strikeouts are there too. It's not like he's pitching to contact and he's just getting lucky. That all proves to me that this is a guy who can go out and be a game one starter. I mean, for Pete's sake, if you look at how his stats have gotten better and how good he's been recently, just back in June, he had a 4.15 ERA. On the season, that's down to a 3.04. He's dropped his ERA more than a full point in the past month here. So, frankly, the way Sean Burke is throwing right now proves to me that he could be the guy. And I wouldn't be surprised if come October, assuming the White Sox make the playoffs and three games up on Cleveland after improving their lead last night after a Cleveland loss and a White Sox win over the Tampa Bay Rays, I wouldn't be surprised if the White Sox, even if they go get a Freddie Peralta or a Robbie Ray or some other rental pitcher, if they go out and say, Sean Burke, you're getting the ball in game one, and he has earned that based on his performance recently. And I don't see any reason why it's going to slow down. The strikeout numbers indicate that he is completely missing bats. And he's been dominant. The White Sox may have found themselves an ace in Sean Burke. And that's big time. White Sox beat the Rays yesterday 6-1. And it was a game where they just, everything kind of went right. The top of the lineup hit a whole bunch of home runs. You had Vargas, Murakami, Montgomery, all homering. And Andrew Benintendi, too, to chip in. And the pitching was good, too. Eric Fetty at the back of the rotation, he's not been great. I'm not going to say he's a shutdown guy, but he's been solid. Will Venable, in his postgame last night, talked about Eric Fetty and how solid that he's been. Actually, we can play Will Venable right now as well. This is what Will Venable in his postgame press conference, it was just such a good game for the White Sox and Will Venable's manager of the year odds are going up. Let's hear from the manager of the Chicago White Sox. This is what he had to say after the game yesterday.
I thought he was outstanding. Obviously, the results speak for themselves, but I thought he was really good, really effective with the sinker and the four-seam fastball. I thought it was just really aggressive with it. Got back into some counts and obviously limited the damage, just that bomb to Caminero. But outside of that, he was just really good.
With what you were dealing with, bullpen-wise, to get the Schweitzer combined, just how restored.
That was huge. You know, that was awesome. We were really limited tonight with our availability, and you know, come through like that with the coverage, but also really good performance and getting some big outs there was awesome.
Five games this year, you've had Mune, Vargas, and Colson all homer in the same one. It's kind of tough for opposing teams to kind of pick which one to maybe not let beat you because they can all beat you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's really special to have those guys right in the middle of your lineup do that five times is really special. And obviously tonight that was huge to be able to get a really good pitcher like that who was really good. And, you know, take Colson, for example, first couple of bats, and then Martinez didn't give him anything to hit at all. And then finally he got something to hit, and it was nice to see him do that. But just obviously a great job and nice to have some slug there in the middle of the lineup.
But can you talk about just the job Benintendi's done this year in kind of a very defined role, but maybe wasn't there at the beginning, but it has kind of grown as the year went on?
Yeah, he's been really consistent. You know, maybe didn't get off to the biggest best start, but got into a nice stretch where he's been really consistent and really hitting the ball hard. I mean, I feel like he's always hitting the ball hard, and he's come through in a lot of big spots for us.
Do you feel like mentally that's just kind of helped him settle in at the plate, just DHing more, you know, all this season?
Well, I think it helps his body. You know, he doesn't have to go out there and beat up his body in the outfield, and so he's putting all of his energy into hitting right now, which is what he needs to do. He is staying sharp because, you know, he might have to go out there. We saw it the other day, but he's just in a really good spot, able to focus on his offense, and you know, he's putting himself in a really good spot.
I know you're more focused on your guys, but are you impressed by Caminero, the power that he has up there at the plate?
Yeah, we were talking about it. I mean, you don't see too many people go where he went on that one, and you hate it when it was against your guy, but it was pretty impressive.
Feels like the third home run maybe the last week where Moody's going to just stay back on an hour half breaking ball and like take it out to left. Is that something you've seen grow over the course of the year? Is it just kind of special to see it at all? What strikes you when you see it through it?
Yeah, I mean, really impressive, obviously. I think, you know, coming out of the injury, you've kind of seen a progression where, he was working on his timing there early, and then you saw him drive some balls to left field, getting some backside hitting, maybe two-strike hitting, and then hitting the ball in the air. And now you're seeing just everything, you know, not just the homers, but you're seeing, driving the ball to the backside for singles. You saw that ball up the middle today. So just really impressive. You feel like he's covering everything.
We were talking about Vargas just getting a little bit unlucky before the game, and just sometimes it's just take one home run to just kind of get you to settle back in at the plate.
Yeah, I feel like he's been hitting the ball really well, and yeah, maybe doesn't have the results, but he continues to take good swings on good pitches and make good swing decisions, and you kind of feel like he's really settled in all year, just having those consistent at-bats where he's always got a chance.
The one that stuck out to me there, the answer from Venable, was on Colson Montgomery, because he's a guy who'd been in a little bit of a slump recently, but he broke out of it yesterday with that home run. So he didn't have anything to hit early, struck out twice, but he took what he did, what he was able to hit, and went deep as well. Four home runs for the White Sox yesterday. Let's pause real quick for station identification on the White Sox Network.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
MLB reporter Jesse Rogers is going to join us coming up to hit on everything trade deadline. What type of pitchers are the White Sox going to get? Will they trade some of their top prospects? We'll talk to Jesse. That's coming up here on White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath and for Jeff Meller.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
White Sox and Rays coming up at 3:10 today, first pitch. And this is White Sox Weekly with Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. Trade deadline coming up on Monday. The White Sox potentially could be making some moves to compete at the top of that AL Central. They extended their lead over the Guardians to 3 games yesterday. Twins won yesterday, so they're still 3 games back. So White Sox trying to fend off both of those teams. The Twins made some moves recently as well. We'll discuss it all as we bring in Jesse Rogers on the Yingling guest hotline. Jess, what's up?
Doing good, Jack. Good to be with you. I wish White Sox Weekly was tomorrow, because I think there'd be more to talk about in terms of moves. It's pretty slow, but I think it will certainly pick up. I've been predicting it for the last couple days, but tomorrow's the day, I think. Tomorrow and then into Monday, of course. Monday will be a flurry as well. But good to be with you. We can try to figure it all out, but it's going to happen soon enough.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. What are you expecting the first dominoes to fall to be? Because sometimes it feels like in free agency, everybody is just waiting for the one big player to be traded or the one big guy to sign. Is that something similar at the trade deadline this year? Is there something everybody's kind of waiting for?
No, I don't think so. It's not a player or one specific team. It's the group of sellers, really, for different reasons. They're kind of holding up the market. There's not that many of them, so they feel like they can hit a home run. The Angels have a new guy in John Mozeliak. He's kind of putting a line in the sand on his guys, and he did it kind of late in the process here. The Mets are asking for the world for their guys because they know people want Clay Holmes and Luke Weaver and Freddie Peralta. So I think it's just the high prices that have held things up, and it's just a small amount of sellers, true sellers. There might be a few sell-buy guys, but the few sellers out there are kind of holding things up a little bit. I can't see it coming down to one player. Like some people might think it's Tarek Skubal, but remember, there's only a few teams probably in on Tarek Skubal, 3-4. I don't think he's completely holding up the market. He was just kind of put on the market the last few days, right? The Tigers, I think we all agree, late in the week, they're decided to 100% sell. So, no, I don't see it that way. I just see it as the few sellers asking for really, really high prices right now. But that should change between, you know, Sunday and Monday.
I feel like the Mets, every once in a while, with their high payroll, can be somewhat unpredictable. Those guys are going to be traded, right? Clay Holmes and Freddie Peralta will be on a new team by Monday.
For sure, Peralta. For sure, Peralta. I believe Holmes as well. Now, Weaver, I believe, has one more year, so there's always a chance. Remember, like you just said, they're a high-priced team. They're never going to go into a rebuild, so they don't want to trade too many guys, then be left with what for next year kind of thing, though they can restock in free agency. So I think they're going to be, yes. If I had to say yes or no to your question, I would say yes. They're all going to be traded. There's always a caveat that maybe they hold one back. That would be Luke Weaver to me. But I definitely see at least two of those three traded, Holmes, Peralta, Weaver, if not all three.
A lot of internet rumors flying out about the White Sox and Freddie Peralta. What have you seen from that? Is there talks going on between the White Sox? I'm sure there's some talks going on between the White Sox and Mets, but how realistic is Freddie Peralta to the White Sox?
I mean, to me, no more realistic than anyone else out there. I don't know what's all on the internet. I'll quote Andrew Benintendi the other day when I asked somebody. He said a lot of people are spewing whatever they want to spew. So, yeah, there's talks. I mean, the White Sox have talked to the Mets, but they've talked to almost everyone. I've kind of been on the rental track with them because the prices are so high. Just imagine how high they are for a guy that has 3 years of team control compared to 2 months. So the two-month guys are high. So the controllable guys are going to be astronomical. So I'm more focused on the Peraltas, the Robbie Rays, and those kinds of guys. The Sox are not giving up like multiple top 10 prospects for Freddie Peralta. Come on. He's got a 5 ERA. Maybe he can find it again. But this is why he hasn't been traded yet. They're asking for a lot for him. So I'll just say I don't think they're connected to Peralta any more or less than anybody else out in the market. There's always a few names that kind of float and just everyone circulates around them. But and then we see a move and it's like, oh, nobody brought that name up. And that's what happens. The GMs like to keep things close to the vest. And if there's a name out there, they don't mind if everyone's circulating the same name. So I can't tell you there's any more connection, but I can tell you there's 7 to 8, 10 teams in on Peralta. So the Sox know more than anyone else.
Peralta's such an interesting case this year. I mean, last year with Milwaukee, he was 17-6 with a 2.7 ERA. And this year he's at a 4.99, just below 5 ERA with the Mets, and has not been very good. And throughout his career, consistently, he had been pretty good coming into this season. So he is an extremely interesting case, a big risk. The Twins also just took on a guy who consistently throughout his career hasn't been great, like has been solid in Dean Kramer, and they also traded for a reliever in AJ Minter, who has a sub-3 ERA and was very solid with the New York Mets. Are the Twins buying at this point after their big sell-off last year?
I mean, they are, but I think it's minor stuff, minor improvements. It's kind of a newish owner. Like, I think the brother handed off to another brother, and I covered this in the offseason. I don't remember exactly how the transition went. New manager, new GM. So there's a lot of like, hey, why don't we go for this, you know, kind of feeling over there. They got a shot in that down league. So I don't think it's a big buy that they're going to be doing. You're seeing what they're doing. But Minter's pretty good. I mean, that's not a nobody. So, and Dean Kramer, you know, certainly they're buying low on him. But the answer to your question is, yeah, they've already done it. So, sure, they're buying. They're certainly not selling. There were rumors they might trade Ryan Jeffers. stuff like that. But I think they're going to kind of go for it. They're in second place in the division now. They've caught Cleveland, and they're just a few games, or they're in the wild card, right? They're tied for the
wild card.
In the wild
card right now, yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, the answer to your question is they're buying. I just don't know if they're going to, like, you know, get a big, big name. That I would have some doubts on that, and certainly doubts on adding a ton of money. But we'll see.
Who's the bigger threat right now to the White Sox? Is it the Twins or Guardians, in your opinion?
It's a great question, because I would bet people listening do not know that the Minnesota Twins have one of the best offenses in the league. They're right there with the White Sox, top of the AL in runs scored per game, at least as of a couple of days ago. Last time I looked.
They have the most runs scored in the American League right now.
There you go. So I'm going to reluctantly say the Twins, but I never want to count the Guardians out. You know, they just fortified a little bit depth-wise today, picked up a pitcher from Milwaukee. I think that could be instrumental with them, and a depth piece in the outfield. You never want to bet against Jose Ramirez. They just don't have enough offense. So I'll lean into it. I've been very much big doubters of the Twins. I'm a Derek Shelton fan, so I'll go ahead and I'll buy into the way the trend is going, and I'll say the Twins are the bigger threat, but I'm very reluctant in saying that.
White Sox three games up of both the Twins and the Guardians right now. Yesterday, we got a call on the postgame show, which was questioning Drew Romo at catcher, and he didn't have, he went 1-for-4. He only had a single yesterday. The catching position since Kyle Teal has been hurt with Edgar Caro and Drew Romo has been underwhelming for the White Sox. From the defense to the offense, you expected a little bit better, at least from Caro. Are the White Sox going to be looking at a catcher for the deadline? And if not, is Kyle Teal going to be back anytime soon?
I don't think Teal's going to be back anytime soon. I do think they're looking at a catcher, but it's not the priority. So not that you can't do both, but they're not going to expend like the good prospect on a catcher. They're going to expend the good prospect on a pitcher.
So no Adley Rutschman is what you're saying.
Well, I don't think so instead of a pitcher. No, I absolutely do not think so instead of a pitcher. If you're sort of giving up one or two prospects, it's going to be for a pitcher. You never say never when a guy like Adley Rutschman's available. Like, that would be a bigger deal and all that. But I think their priority is pitching. I've said it all week on the radio. Like, they've gotten to this point with absolutely no production out of their catching situation. If they go into the playoffs with catching as is and don't address the pitch, or they upgrade the catching and not the pitching, that'd be silly. They can do just fine catch with their catchers now. It's not great. You want to try to upgrade, and this might be a year to do it, but a lot of teams are looking for catching, which is weird. So I just think that they're concentrated on the starting staff. Fetty pitched really well last night. It's like Fetty and Anthony Kay are like reading the headlines and like, hey, man, I don't want to lose my gig here. But we know there's a room there, even if it's just for Noah Schultz. There's a room there for a playoff caliber pitcher. They're available. The amount of starting pitching that seemingly is available is amazing. Now, maybe it's like last July when it seemingly was available and the prices were too high. I'm just 2 minutes ago, I told you the prices are high. Maybe they're going to remain high. It would be silly for the Mets to hold on to Peralta, though, and Robbie Ray with San Francisco, so I assume they're going to come down. So I don't think they're going to address catcher in the biggest way. I will say the Sox, there's a few other teams have really kept things close to the vest, so there could be something catching-wise. But last I heard, the priority is pitching, and the catching situation is, yeah, we want to get one because we lost one, and because you just can never have enough catchers. And, you know, you lose a couple, you're in real trouble heading into October. So I think it's that more than the big, big deal.
Switching gears here a little bit, the big name in Detroit is Tarik Skubal. But Casey Mize is also on the trade block, and it's listed on ESPN.com that the White Sox are one of the best fits for him. I don't know that the Tigers or the White Sox, I think it would be a big leap for either team to trade within the division, but Casey Mize has good stuff, and the White Sox have shown that they can make pitchers better when they get him in the system. Is Casey Mize, or anybody within the division, a possibility, or is it because it's in the division, it's just untouchable for either side?
Well, it'd be better if the Tigers were way out of the race. Then I would say yes. But the Tigers probably want to trade Scooble and still kind of compete. I mean, they're 3.5 out of the wild card. So I don't think they would do it with that in mind necessarily. Having said that, in a vacuum, the answer would be yes. Because, look, the Sox farm system is good. And if Scott Harris, who's in charge of the Tigers, or any executive, you know, here's the best offer from within the division, you're going to pull the trigger. Now, usually they call it an in-division tax. You're going to have to pay a little bit more. And I don't think Getz is in that world right now where he wants to overpay for Casey Mize, because that's what it takes to do in inner city Cubs, Sox, Yankees, Mets, or in the division. There's usually a bit more of a tax, so you can go back to your fan base and say, hey, man, look what I got for him. I got a lot for Casey Mize. So normally you can trade in the division. I mean, in certain circumstances, one team's way out of the race, you overpay for him, all that stuff. But in this situation, I would have my doubts that the Sox would get Casey Mize.
Who are you thinking for Scooble, and what's the price? What's the price up to at this point? Because I think it's just going to be astronomical for the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah, they're still figuring it out, which is kind of crazy. I think it's all going to kind of start to come to fruition, as I said, about all the other deals tomorrow. But, major league ready pitcher, so they can continue to compete this year. Top five prospect in your system. I don't think they're going to get a number one. They're trying. I don't think they're going to get Jesus Madé on the Milwaukee Brewers or Josiah Hartshorn on the Cubs. But 2 through 5 should be available to the Tigers if you want Scooble. And then a secondary prospect. If you're going to give them the 5th prospect, then maybe you have to give them the 10th, 11th, or 12th. If you're going to give them your 2nd-ranked prospect, maybe you can give them the 15th-ranked prospect. That's kind of how I'm seeing it. They're going to try for the number one prospect in somebody's system. I don't know if they're going to get there. That's kind of like the Cubs' Aroldis Chapman, for Gleyber Torres deal. These days teams love their prospects and hold on to them. So I think the number ones might be off limits, but number 2, number 3, and then a number 10, 11, that's kind of what we're looking at, along with a major league pitcher, probably from your rotation, the guy that Scooble's kind of replacing, so to speak, in theory. So that's the way I look at it.
All right, Jess, anything else we should know?
I don't think so. I think that, going back to what I said before, just because you see things on the internet, don't believe them. There's so much going on behind the scenes.
I've been told that before.
Yeah, there's so many, as the line I've been using all week is fishing lines in the water. You just don't know which one, someone's gonna bite on. I do actually want to say one more thing. In a sport that is, it's a big sample size sport, we're always saying, don't look at a week, don't even look at a month when it comes to a team or a player. It cracks me up that when it comes down to the deadline, we're all about the small sample size. And what I'm getting at is, I wonder if we know this for sure, that Chris Guest has changed his tune from April to May to June about how aggressive he wants to be for this 2026 squad. And I wonder, as we look at the small sample size of this week or even this weekend, the way they beat the Rays last night, let's see what happens today and tomorrow. Is Chris getting even more aggressive with the small sample size of what they did in the last couple of games against the Yankees and even this weekend? Because you don't even have to squint and necessarily see the Sox in the ALCS. Especially if you do something, dramatic here in the next couple of days. You don't have to squint at it. You might have to squint to see them in the World Series, because let's pretend the Yankees are healthy. That's going to be a really tough team to beat in October. But getting to the Yankees or getting to the ALCS against anybody, I think that's a real possibility if you do the right things. I love the formula that they have, and it showed up last night. Slug and bullpen. I've been saying it for a while, Jack. Left-handed slug specifically and a bullpen will get you far in October. That was a playoff caliber win to me, plus, of course, the starting pitching from Fetty last night, because all you did was run into a few home runs, and that's what October is about most of the time. So I do wonder if Getz is getting even more aggressive.
All right, Jesse. Well, thanks for the time. That's Jesse Rogers on the England Guest Hotline. Have a good one, Jess.
You got it, Jack. Be well.
All right, Jesse Rogers on the England Guest Hotline. Coming up, Ryan Fuller, the White Sox director of hitting, spoke and said some interesting things about Colson Montgomery and Tristan Peters. We'll play that coming up next. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at @ESPN_Chicago.
White Sox versus Rays today. It's Noah Schultz versus Drew Rasmussen. Jordan Hicks is going to be the opener today, and then Schultz will take over in a bulk role for the White Sox. First pitch coming up at 3:10, coming off a White Sox win yesterday, 6-1 over Tampa Bay. This is White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. And we're going to play some audio here from the White Sox director of hitting, Ryan Fuller. There's some really good insight in here on both Tristan Peters and Colson Montgomery, as well as the rest of the White Sox hitters. This is what Ryan Fuller had to say. It opens talking about how he's seen Colson Montgomery adapt over the 162-game season.
It's 162 games. Colson just eclipsed his one-year mark of being a big leaguer, so to think that he should know and be perfect every day obviously isn't reality. For all these young guys are learning what it takes to go through 162, there's going to be some peaks, some valleys, but man, he's one of the best shortstops in the league right now. Of course, July's been a little bit of a tough month. You look at his metrics underneath and he'll be the first one to tell you, like, not where we want it to be, but he's working at addressing it. So like all these guys, problem solving and letting them know, like, yeah, you're struggling right now, that's part of the process, no big deal, get back to work. So look forward to seeing him make adjustments.
What part of that is mentally getting prepared for 162? How big a part do you think that is?
It's something we preach in the minor leagues. Obviously, these guys, you play a lot of games, you're playing 6 days in a row. It's not the big leagues, though. Big leagues, different animal, especially with Schuttler's on the mound. Hunter Brown was on the mound the other day. Like, these are the best of the best that you're going up against. So for sure, the physical adjustments sometimes are easy, the mental part a little bit harder, but luckily Shell, Joel, Tony, our hitting coaches, are really equipped to deal with both.
It's rare for a guy to, you know, be that good against left-handers this early in his career. What sorts of things do you pull out of there trend-wise to go, hey, here, apply this to righties, or is that a thing that works that way? How to balance things, I guess, for him?
Lefties, hitting lefties is one of the hardest things to do in baseball, so we can't just look at your struggling against righties. You're doing something that is so hard that some guys spend their whole career trying to figure out, and you're doing it. So that's a strength right there. How can we take that approach and tailor it to the righties too? So he'll be the first one to tell you, regardless of who's on the mound, I'm trying to hit a short line drive over the shortstop's head. I'm trying to take out the shortstop. So now it's, how do we make the small adjustments physically to make sure that he's staying close, staying on the ball, as he is against lefties versus righties.
Edgar, talk about getting a second chance here, and I know you've been working with him. What difference have you seen since being called back up, and just what did you make of the walk-off?
Man, it's awesome. I mean, he wants to be in those moments, and for all the guys, when you get to the big leagues, you don't always stay in the big leagues for 10 years. A lot of guys go back down to AAA, you learn lessons. To Q's credit, went down there, like, physically, he looks incredible right now. He's lost a little bit of weight, looks a little bit better. When your body changes too, the way your body moves is going to change with it, and we've seen it change for the better too. So for him, he took it in stride. He knew, okay, I need to get my swing in a good spot, my body in a good spot, and he's done that. And then to see him rewarded last night is really cool.
Kirk Colson, for someone as kind of loft and power oriented as he can be, is it kind of normal to go through stretches where, you mentioned the folks on hitting line drives where, you know, people are trying to, you know, one, pop him up a little bit, but like you also try to ride fastballs over the top of him that he might swing under, or has to kind of recalibrate to deal with?
Each guy has a miss in their swing. There's a part of the zone that you're not going to be able to cover, and all these guys go with Show and Joel after the game, go through their at-bats the previous night. What was my miss? And we see with Colson, most of the time he's going to miss under fastballs. So now it's, how do I make that swing adjustment where it's not a foul ball, where the one, when he's really rolling his bat pass in a good spot, it's a hard line drive or a home run. So those small tweaks where Colson will be the first one to tell you, like, I'm one swing away, I'm one adjustment away, and what they're doing right now for the next 2 hours in the cage, he's going to be calibrated to make that adjustment.
You mentioned a couple of young guys. What stood out to you about both Brandon and
these guys are so impressive, and they love coming to the ballpark and working with each other every day. I think that is a huge piece to it. Sammy, man, what he was able to do last night to get to that pitch in that spot, to keep it in the air, hit it out of the ballpark, we haven't seen that. Usually that's going to be a rollover or swing and miss, so we see them making adjustments. And with Braden, we haven't seen the best of Braden yet. and he's still holding his own. He's taking really good at-bats, taking walks when they're presented. Once he gets comfortable and continues to learn, he's going to be a force.
When Braden is driving the ball in the air, when he's doing it now, like, what are you seeing him start to do that, you know, maybe you see him get more consistent over time?
Yeah, it's been a few months. Obviously, the timing piece for all these guys, like, they're seeing premium velo, and it's not just velo, like, 7 feet of extension. Like, they just do not see that in the minor league. So for Braden and all the guys, when you're able to hit the ball hard on a line in the air, you're catching it in a good contact point. His contact points, when he's a little bit late, get a little bit too deep. Once he understands, okay, this is when I need to start my swing. It was never that early in the minor leagues, but I'm going to have to make the adjustment to start even earlier. He's going to be able to get to those spots and hit really productive balls.
With my draw, we're seeing a lot more pull. We're seeing him hit the ball hard. Probably always has hit the ball hard, but was there a technique change for him recently?
No technique change. Obviously, they're always working on something. Chase's profile is always going to have to be good decisions and good contact. Like, we don't want that to go away. It's not telling him, hey, sacrifice contact for more damage, and if you strike out, who cares? That's not his profile. He knows what he's going to be. But again, a guy early in his career, he's seeing who he is, and the fastball to be able to hit 97, two balls in, inside, and being able to turn on it, he was looking for a pitch away, and you show him that, like, man, you don't need to cheat to ever try and pull, because you're looking away and able to react in. That's a special gift. So all these guys, keeping your strengths while working on the things we need to work on.
The interesting thing about him is that, you know, when people try to put him in a certain category, little guy, second baseman, right field hitter, he's always pushed against any type of theories like that. What do you see mentally in him that makes him the player he is?
Chase is a dog. He's coming here for war every single day. He wants to be in the cage early. He wants to push the guys. He knows that we're playing the Yankees. It's going to be a fight. We got to do something today. So more than anything else, stature, how the way he looks. I mean, he's 6'6", 250 in his head. I mean, he is definitely a dog that we love having on our side.
When you see the swing that Mooney take on the home run yesterday, there's probably not a lot of guys that can hit that pitch out, off speed, corner. Oppo, what is so right about that makes him special?
You said it so well. That location is a pitcher's pitch. Early curveball, down and away. His ability to stay on the baseball and stay through that ball, so special. But then it's the physical gifts he has to the bat speed, the physicality to be able to hit the ball out of the park. For most guys, if they swing at that, it's hit off the end, it's a pop up to shortstop. You see the special gifts that Mooney has, where even when he's not at his best or he didn't get the ball perfectly, he's still able to muscle it out of here. So again, you just see those special attributes of Mooney, and you just enjoy watching.
With Mooney, yeah, there was a lot was made before the season about his ability to catch up to the fastball, and he's hitting that velocity better than anyone in the league. What is it about his approach on that pitch that's been so successful this year?
Number one, Mooney trains it. He's facing high velocity, high spin, all the machines. He's hitting trajectory. Shows what type of learner he is. He wants to be challenged, and that hasn't changed from day one when he came out to Glendale. Wants all the information, knows what people have said, doesn't care at all. He's going to go to work, and the aptitude that he has, the ability to make adjustments, can't wait to see him continue to do that as he builds out his Rolodex of the pitchers he's faced here.
I know you're confident about him, like, based on what you saw in video, but, like, other just, you know, he's 26, other things he's just upgraded over the course of the year, whether it's, like, you know, how good a shape he came in spring with, or how mobile his barrel is, like, other things that you've seen, like, you thought he was good, but, like, are better than, you know, he's improved over the course of the year.
That's the most fun of doing this, when you're looking at acquisitions or draft, you're looking at stat sheets and metrics. When you get to sit down with Mooney, it was, oh man, this guy is really special. Swinging and missing on traject, and then it's, okay, he takes a second, makes an adjustment, and you see, wow, this guy, ultimate competitor, really quick adjustment. So once we saw that, and you guys see it all the time too, he's not trying to just touch the ball, move it around. Like, before two strikes, he's looking to do damage. But you see the curveball that he hit out yesterday, like, that's a really difficult back half to cover. With two strikes, the ability to back it up, and then when they make a mistake, do what he does so well. But yeah, the variability within his swing is special.
Tristan Peters has been asked to do more things this season at the plate than maybe any of your other hitters. What challenges does that present to you guys as a hitting staff to kind of work with him to get all of those things done and then, you know, keep him consistent in his first big league season, really?
Yeah, it's no secret when camp broke and he's on the team, he was asked to, hey, you're going to bunt a lot and play really good defense. And you fast forward and he's an all-star and one of our best hitters. Incredible story that we could sit here and talk about forever. But for him, like all these guys, you were really good. You were an all-star. Now you need to make adjustments. There's going to be parts of the zone that you covered before that they're just not going to go to. They're going to attack different parts. We got to do a really good job of combating that. And he's working through it. Again, this guy, first year in the big leagues, having so much success. It's not just up and to the right. There's going to be some areas we need to make adjustments, and he's doing just that.
Is he kind of seeing the drawback, I guess, of being so good at covering velocity at this point? I mean, he was just so good covering the fastball for a while. It seems like it's just a lot of spin here. A
lot of spin right now, and he'll be the first one to tell you that, like, very aware of, hey, should my approach change? Should I be on a different pitch? And then great conversations with Sho and Joel to be able to prepare. But that's the fun part of, you don't want to come up and just be good at one thing. You want to be dynamic, and he's learning, okay, I had one really good tool. Now how many tools can I add to that toolbox?
As good as he's been, like, his chase has been, like, above his minor league norms, like, all year. Do you see that it's, like, not low-hanging fruit, but, like, room for growth still, that, like, even though the success he's had, like, there's still things he can kind of, you know, get back to where he's been at other levels in his career?
Sho and Joel are the best at being real with the guys. And when we have their metrics kind of go a little bit out of the ranges we want it, conversations are had, and we were talking this morning of, hey, man, we got to tighten up just a little bit, making sure your skill of touching the baseball is special. Now it's not outside of the zone where you're going to have not great productive angles. When you keep them in the zone, really good angles, you make hard contact. So all these guys learning to stay in the zone when they throw it outside, spit on it, get another one.
How good do you and your hitting coaches feel about the success of all these players and just the growth that you've seen with so many of them right now?
The alignment that we have between the hitting department is really special and rare. Everybody's in tune, everybody's talking. The players feel that. The availability that Sho and Joel have to talk with the players about anything, to stay late, to go over. You see these guys learn what it truly means to be a pro, to make adjustments, and they have coaches willing to do that too. We have main values that we adhere to, but within those, the coaches are always looking to make those small changes to cater to the players and where they are. We understand ups and downs throughout the year. Guys aren't always going to be as mentally sharp, but we got really good leaders in here that are leading these guys, showing them what it's going to take to win, not just in the regular season, but as we continue to build this out.
Does that mean you feel good about what you're doing?
Very happy with Sho, Joel, and Tony, what they're doing up here, and you see it with the performance. We haven't seen performances like this in a while.
You can take some credit.
Next question.
along those lines of everybody in line, what is your part of the day when it comes to the major league team? Are you addressing guys that are struggling mostly, or is it you're doing the same thing every day, or more time on those guys, or what's it like for you?
Every day communicating with Joel and Sho about the guys. So regardless whether I'm in Chicago or I'm in Kannapolis working with the minor league guys, constant communication. We have an unbelievable R&D and biomech department that's feeding us, hey, this is what the guys were doing the last few days. This is a little out of range. Talking with them about tweaks, but when I'm here, it's the best. It's supporting everybody, making sure the message is being conveyed, making sure Sho, Joel, if they need anything, if they need somebody to throw mixed pitch BP to the guys, get in the cage or be a little bit more hands-off. But the conversations, making sure guys have really good clarity on what they're trying to do, making sure that there's so many things that they could pull from. This is your plan. Focus on this. Things are going to be good. So more than anything else, supporting everybody.
Ryan, the organization put a lot of time, obviously, into scouting Rock Chulowski. Now that you've actually had an opportunity to work with him individually, what stands out to you? Is there anything that you learned about him that you maybe didn't know going into the scouting process?
Again, you hear all the great stuff about Rock. Getting to spend time with him, everything is true. Leader, loves baseball, loves being one of the boys. I mean, at draft camp in Charlotte, like, he took every single guy that was drafted out for a steak dinner. Like, a leader, just a really cool dude that wants to be a part of what's going on here. The really cool part for me is, like, the White Sox, everybody would be like, who's on the White Sox? What's the roster? Like, Rock, all these guys know exactly who's on the big league team. Like, they're fans of these guys. And then the conversations with Rock, what is Colson working on? How did Miguel Vargas get so good? And then we can point to Miguel Vargas 2 years ago, man, like, really bad. Had to make all these adjustments. That's what you're going to do as you get to the big league level. Colson has to get sent down to Arizona. So, again, letting them know, like, this is going to be difficult, but Rock ready to go through those trials and tribulations to get here and help win a championship.
Did Miguel know that you kind of used him as an example at the draft camp? And what did he say to that?
Yeah, we've used him a few times with the young guys, showing him, like, man, what a cool story that you have. Everyone thinks when you're signed for a lot of money or a high draft pick, you're just going to go straight to the majors. With the Dodgers, one of their best prospects comes over here, gets hit in the gut a little bit, has to make adjustments. Where he is now is incredible. And to be able to not just tell the story of what we're going to be, but point to the players who have done it already is really inspiring for the younger guys.
Some of the mid-season prospect updates are kind of assessing Bonimer, where they're like, wow, this guy looks power over hit now. The contact rate's gone down. I know you and I have talked about how much breaking stuff you see, but, like, how have you seen this evolution? Maybe you have a rosier view of, like, his hit tool than, you know, what people just looking at performance might see.
You know the three main skills: decisions, contact, damage. Bonnie, in his career prior to this year, all three, felt confident. Patient, good decisions, makes contact, hits it hard on a line. This year, obviously, we see, like, the decisions stay strong. Damage take a huge tick up, contact down a little bit. Again, we don't know the profile, what Caleb's going to be at his best, but we know that it's really special. He's got 26 home runs. It's July 30th. That's exciting by itself. And the fact that he already does have the contact skill that he showed previously, it's in there. So now how do we make that three-pillar player, which is one of the best profiles you could have in the game? So looking forward to seeing him continue to develop.
Ryan Fuller, the White Sox director of hitting. There's some encouraging stuff on Rock Chalowski and Caleb Bonimer, two of the White Sox top prospects. And Sox fans, be here on Friday, August 7th, as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:40 p.m. Then stick around after the game for a post-game concert featuring Ja Rule, presented by Coca-Cola. Exclusive on-field passes are on sale now with limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. Waddle and Sylvie sat down with White Sox pitcher Mike Vassell, and he's always super fun to talk to. We'll replay that conversation coming up. This is White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller.
The Sox on your phone, the ESPN Chicago app.
White Sox Weekly, Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. And White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2027 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, opening day on April 1st, and exciting new promotions. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2027. Mike Vassell, White Sox pitcher, he's been hurt all season, but has turned into a clubhouse leader. He sat down with Waddle and Sylvie, and he was asked, how did he become a clubhouse guy?
I think realistically for me, like, last year I was always myself in the clubhouse. I would have good energy and everything. And not to say that I've taken it a step further this year, but I've always just loved being, like, a clubhouse guy, like, in the locker room with my teammates, like, being one of those guys. Like, there's nothing better for me than waking up every day, showing up to the yard and seeing my teammates. Like, I honestly hate the offseason because I just love being a part of a team. Like, I want to be with my fellas. So, you know, everything else with the wand, the wizard, the energy, you know, that's happened naturally. And I think it's important that stuff happens naturally. But for me, day to day, it's just show up, be the same guy. Like, I know I'm injured right now, but doesn't mean I can't contribute.
First of all, the Capoletti family from Wellesley, Massachusetts says hello. So do the Francises. They say hello to you. And secondly, I was just going
to
ask.
Explain to him,
Mike's from Wellesley. Am I right? You went to Boston College High School, but Mike's from Wellesley. I found out this weekend my sister-in-law, Gina Francis, was in town, and we were talking about the White Sox, and we were talking about you. And my sister-in-law, Gina, was like, well, I know Mike's mom. We've been great friends for years. So I was like, you're never going to believe it. We're going to have Mike on this week. So. Just another reminder, awesome. Mike, how small the world really is. But yes, my wife went to Wellesley High School. The whole family grew up in Wellesley, and just a wonderful place. I went to Boston College, so great place you're from, first and foremost.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Great area. Great, you know, BC. I got a lot of friends that went to BC. I went to BC High, you know. Yeah. Didn't do the double eagle, but, you know, we're still eagles at the end of the day.
That's right.
That's great.
I was going to ask you, though, like most guys, unless you're a veteran, probably if you're going through the rehab that you're going through, probably don't spend a whole lot of time with the big league roster. You're probably somewhere else. So just what kind of an opportunity and what do you say to the White Sox for making this possible that you can do the rehab and also be with the club on a consistent basis?
Yeah, first and foremost, like, I think the veterans on the team that we do have, like, really vouched for me hard to be with the team. Yeah. But also the next, you know, I think it was a couple days after, I talked to Skip, I talked to Will, and he was like, you know, I think it's important we have you with the team. You know, it's an important thing for the clubhouse, but it's rare. Like, look, it's rare. I know it's not a normal thing by any means, but at the same time, it's kind of like funny because it's also an identity of what this team's about. Like, I'll never forget Randall Grichuk. He joined our team. He's in Anaheim. We just won the game. We're walking up the steps and we hadn't even done like our post game celebration. We haven't even had a flight with him yet. Like, whatever, just all the cool, fun stuff where you make memories together. And he's walking up the steps and he's like, this team's truly a one of one, huh? So like, just all in all, the team itself is just different. Like, I've never really been a part of a clubhouse, especially, you know, last year we did have a fun team. We weren't as good, but it was still a very fun team. But like, something about the energy, the coaching staff, just the dynamic in the locker room is just so different, but it's so special because literally every single person on this team is a different character. Like, it's almost like every day you show up and it's like a Seinfeld episode, like something new is going to happen every day. Like, it's awesome.
Well, who's Kramer?
Ooh, well, that at times I could even remind myself as Kramer, but I would honestly say Kramer for us, maybe a mix of a little bit of, you know, this is going to be shocking, but a little bit of Drew Romo because of how he can be a strange cat sometimes. Kyle Teal's a good Kramer. Kyle Teal's actually probably the front runner for Kramer, hands down. And I'm going to give my roommate Chase Mydroth George Costanza because I love, you know, giving him stuff, you know?
That's awesome.
So, like, give us, like, is Mydroth then the guy? Who? Because we've asked everybody about who else are the characters. Who would you list as, like, the more outgoing guy next to you?
Partner in crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the characters, you know, Chase is on there for sure. You know, Mune's a character as well. Like, hands down, the guy is hilarious. Like, you catch him at the right time. He is so funny. Mune is unbelievably funny. And especially, you know, obviously once it's game time, he's not joking around. Right. But, like, you know, I remember, I think it was like his third flight or whatever, and we're hanging out with him on the plane, and we just got him going. And it was like, this guy is going to, like, we want him around forever. Like, he's the best guy ever. Derek Shoman, the hitting coach, character, hands down. Like, I think his energy that he brings every day is so infectious to this lineup. What we're able to do at any given moment, score 7 runs in an inning, like his passion for the game. And then even like the little pitching staff coaching core as well as like characters, Bove, Bobby Hearn, Matt Wise, like it's just pockets of different guys. I walk around the clubhouse and I always know I'm going to get something out of somebody because of the culture.
So great. Mike Vassell joining us. On the note of Mune, we asked this to Davis Martin. I think we freaked him out a little bit too. Do you get to use the bidet?
Davis got freaked out about that?
I think we took him by surprise.
There was a little shock. Like,
you're on the right show, Mike, because well, like, I think if any show would vibe with you, it's us, because that's sort of the way we go. And I don't think Davis Martin was anticipating that in his first conversation with us.
I'll tell you what, Mune bringing the bidet to the Chicago White Sox might be one of the greatest things that's ever happened in this locker room. There are frequent flyers to the bidet day in and day out, and that's what I'll say.
That's fantastic. The vibe inside the clubhouse, you've already spoken about. How about inside the ballpark? compared to last year when the team wasn't doing as well? You said there was a vibe. It was a group of great guys. But now compared to the excitement that you show up and you see every day.
Yeah, I mean, like even last night, right? Tuesday night game against the Yankees. Obviously, you know, the Yankees are in town, big game, but like absolutely packed. And I think every day getting ready for the game and guys getting prepared, what the fan base is doing for us and supporting us and showing up and filling the seats in, like it gives us so much motivation to want to win and want to get better and, you know, want to give the fans a special experience every night. And just the vibe and the energy in the ballpark has been so amazing. And the other thing, too, what I've noticed this year, because I grew up, you know, going to Red Sox games, and there's been years where the Red Sox weren't good, but Fenway Park fills up because it's Fenway Park. What I love about every time, you know, the rate fills up is like our fans are locked in. Like, they're not just cheering to cheer. Like, they're cheering because something good is going on in the game. Like, if we're not scoring or something like that, they're not just going to stand up and yell. Right. But like, we're getting hits, we're scoring runs, we have a big strikeout. Like, these are true baseball fans. And that's what's been so awesome about it.
Mike, how's the demeanor of the team right now? Like, this isn't any major losing going on, but it's a hiccup. And you're facing a really good team. Is everybody feeling good still with the recent couple of games you've gone through?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think for us, like, we even have talked about, like, look, we've played good baseball. But we still don't think we played our best baseball. Like, we all know that we can even play better and everything. And I think for us, what, you know, is always important is that we know we can win any series against any team. It's really about staying consistent, you know, like, let's not let it dip too far. But, you know, at the same time, like, I think tonight's a great opportunity to get back on track, win tonight, win tomorrow, and then, you know, head down to Tampa. And I think for us, the biggest thing moving forward, like I said, is just being consistent and winning and always keeping ourselves in the ballgame, because we've done it so many times this year, walk-offs or late inning heroics. You know, Benny had that grand slam in Yankee Stadium last time we played him. Like, just little stuff like that.
I mean, that was Wednesday, so Mike Vassell speaking perfectly there. You can listen to the rest of that episode on the Waddle and Sylvie podcast. Just go back to Wednesday, listen on the ESPN Chicago app. Mike Vassell on Waddle and Sylvie. Man, he is a great interview. And Sox fans, head to the ballpark on Tuesday, August 11th, as the White Sox take on the Cincinnati Reds at 6:40 p.m. All fans in attendance will receive a White Sox Pope hat. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, more White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Captain Jay Hood, weekday morning, 6 to 9, ESPN Chicago.
Hit in the air, out into right. That is deep. It will get on out of here. Did that hit one of the rings?
It hit the catwalk. Yes, it did.
Wow. 2-0 in the second.
Absolutely crushed.
The pitch. Swing and a fly ball. Well hit to right. And it will go for a two-run blast. And another one that hit the catwalk.
There have been three balls in this game to hit the catwalks here at the Trop. Thank goodness two of them are by the White Sox batters.
So the White Sox hit four home runs yesterday, and a few of them were absolutely crushed. I mean, Miguel Vargas's was 435 feet. Junior Caminero on the other side hit a 453-foot home run. But the point I want to bring up is those silly catwalks. I can't stand indoor baseball. It doesn't make sense. The game is an outdoor game, and we don't get to see how far these awesome home runs fly because they hit the catwalks attached to the roof of an indoor field at Tropicana Field. I don't like the Brewer Stadium when it's indoors. I don't like Tropicana Field when it's indoors, and I understand it's a little rainy there, so maybe they just have to have it. But it doesn't feel like baseball indoors. It feels like an arcade game with baseball happening to go on in between it. It ruins it for me. What do you think? 312-332-3776. And Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for City Connect Fridays. Catch the team in the iconic uniforms every Friday night and shop the full collection at the team store. For more info, head to whitesox.com/city. White Sox and Rays, first pitch at 3:10 today. Pre-game will be coming up at 2:30. We'll talk to Scott Merkin, writer for MLB.com, next about the White Sox week and looking ahead to this tough series against Tampa Bay after the White Sox won 6-1 yesterday. We'll talk everything White Sox with Scott Merkin coming up. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
the ESPN Chicago Triple Play, AM, FM, HD, and app.
White Sox look to extend the winning streak to four games today. They have a three-game lead over the Cleveland Guardians and the Minnesota Twins, who have clawed their way back into the division race. We're going to talk to Scott Merkin from MLB.com, but before we do that, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
And Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Saturday, August 8th, as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:15 p.m. Come early as we honor legend Ozzie Guillen with the retirement of his iconic number 13 jersey. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive an Ozzie Guillen replica jersey presented by Verve, a credit union. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Ozzie. Now we bring in Scott Merkin, writer for MLB.com, on the Yuengling guest hotline. And Scott, I opened the show today saying that it felt like on Wednesday the White Sox were on the precipice of disaster. They could have dropped three in a row to the Yankees, but they completely turned it around, and now they've won three in a row in this treacherous journey through the AL East. I mean, it just feels good for the White Sox right now.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you to some extent. I think with the way they've played this year, I'm not sure if precipice of disaster was there, but I think it was close to being concerning. You know, this is the only team this season who hasn't lost more than three games in a row. So that would, the only team in baseball. So that would be, that would have been three, and, you know, Weathers pitched his butt off the next day, as did, you know, as did the White Sox. So, I mean, it could have been a troubled situation, but that comeback was huge. There's no doubt about it. You know, you got to factor in the inexplicable Ally Sanchez throw to third there, the pickoff throw with two outs in the 11th inning. I guess he thought Murakami was leaning too far off third base there, but that kept the game going, and it might have kept going anyways. You know, there's Tendi and Brayden Montgomery and Tristan Peters would have still had chances, obviously, but it was a huge win, and last night was just total dominance here in Tampa. They literally, as soon as Vargas hit that home run in the first inning, you just had a feel like, okay, they're not going to lose this game, and they played great baseball throughout.
Yeah, and against Nick Martinez, too, who's been one of the better pitchers for the Tampa Bay Rays this year, is kind of he's had his best season of his career with the sub-3 ERA. And Scott, I know the trade deadline's coming up, and the Sox have a lot of momentum.
Right.
But for some players, that can also add a little bit of stress. For some guys who think they may lose their spot on the roster, be pushed back. Eric Fetty pitched really well yesterday. He's one of those guys that might be feeling the pressure right now. What's the feeling in the clubhouse right now, balancing that momentum with a little bit of the stress of the trade deadline?
I mean, you really wouldn't know if it was August 1st or May 1st in the clubhouse. This is how they've been all year. You know, it's such a close-knit group. It's such a focused group on the day-to-day stuff. Yeah, I'm sure privately there are guys who are thinking, you know, looking at the roster and saying, well, if they add player X or player Y or player Z, then it may mean, you know, my role changes or my role is gone. But I don't think they concern themselves about anything hypothetical until it actually happens. They're too focused on winning. They're too focused on, you know, cementing this division title and doing more. You know, Tristan Peters was talking to me yesterday about World Series championships. Miguel Vargas was talking a little bit about that. Miguel Vargas goes back as far as last year, where he was talking about, you know, he had really good thoughts about this team as they were learning to win. And that was kind of the case the second half of last year, even though they, you know, still finished well below 500, and you're seeing it manifest itself this year. So I don't think there's anyone, especially because it's almost certain none of the young guys are going anywhere. So I think, you know, it may be veterans privately thinking about, well, how will this affect me? You know, but yeah, you can't really assume anything until it actually happens.
When you say Tristan Peters was talking to you about World Series, what specifically do you mean? That he was talking about he thinks this team can get to and win the World Series, or was it deeper than
that? He said that's everyone's goal. You know, he said that's everyone's goal in that clubhouse. And he said, if you don't think that way, you can't do it, which makes total sense. So, you know, I don't want to downplay what they're doing, because they've had an excellent season. They're a very good team. They're equaling a season high as we get ready for today's game at 7 over .500. But let's be honest, you know, the AL is not great this year. I mean, aside from Tampa, the Yankees have great pitching, obviously. You know, in the series against the Sox, they were missing Aaron Judge. They were missing Giancarlo Stanton. They were missing Clay Bellinger. Cody Bellinger. They're really missing Clay Bellinger because he retired a long time ago. But, you know, they're missing their big hitters. But, I mean, you know, I mean, the team leading the AOS is the Astros at one game over 500. The Blue Jays, who are thought to be sellers, are 9 under and, you know, have like the fourth worst record in the American League, but they're also 4.5 games out of a playoff spot. So it's there for the taking. And aside from that, I don't think the White Sox as players, that's something that I'll look at. That's something that fans will look at. The players don't look at that. They just know that they have a team that's capable of winning and winning championship baseball. So that's what they're believing right now.
The power's been absolutely ridiculous from Colson Montgomery, right. Mutataka Murakami, and Miguel Vargas. Their fifth game, I'm reading your article on MLB.com right now about how this is their fifth game homering together. That core has really carried the load, and the power has just been great.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all goes back to, it's hard to put into words, and this is, you know, Miguel has been a great story. I mean, I wrote about this when he made the All-Star team about the, you know, the picture of him when the Sox lost their 21st in a row in 24, sitting at the corner of the dugout looking, you know, a little forlorn, to being an All-Star and a regular contributor, not just offensively, but defensively. But and Colson's been a revelation, you know, after struggling so much in the minors since he came to the majors last July 4th. But you can't underestimate what Mutataka and Murakami has meant to this team. I mean, just in so many ways. And I've talked about this a bunch. Everyone's talked about this a bunch. You know, he's not only opened up the Pacific Rim to the White Sox, where there was previously not much action, but he's just given that team that edge. You know, Will Venables talked about this, that when he's in the lineup, I think the rest of the lineup just feels more confident, more comfortable. And it just took him. Will, again, had another good comparison yesterday where he said he thought his struggles, whatever they were, which weren't pronounced, coming off the IL, were the same things he was dealing with when he first started his major league career. That, you know, he did homer in his all three games against Milwaukee, but he was just kind of getting adjusted. And once he did, forget about it. And that's what we saw in that Yankee series, is he's seeing pitches well. He kind of finds his groove. And, you know, with the energy, extra energy he has from missing 35 days, it could be quite a 2 month finishing kick for Mutataka Murakami.
Yeah. You spoke about Will Venable there a little bit, and Kevin Cash, the manager for the Rays, and Will Venable, the manager for the White Sox, they go up against each other today. Those are probably the two favorites right now for manager of the year. One of those two guys is going to win the award in the AL. Can you speak a little bit more about Will Venable's impact on this team and in this clubhouse, especially as the momentum continues to grow?
I know he's an intern, but I would think Tracy in Boston would be in that conversation too, right?
Yeah, after the winning streak, yes, he's vaulted himself in there too.
Probably Derek Shelton, because no one thought the Twins were going to be in anywhere near contention, even though they're a 500 team. But back to your question, not trying to add to that.
No, 100%.
I mean, Will is, you know, they got the right guy, and you could see that with Chris Getz when they announced Will, and you could see that in the, you know, Chris got like the perfect co-pilot to what he wants to do with this franchise, with this team. Will, you know, Will makes his point. You talk to the players, and, you know, he's not like a turnover the table sort of guy, but he makes his point when he needs to make a point. Or, you know, he talked about these meetings that he has once a month, kind of a state of the White Sox, to talk about the team, talk about where they're going, what they've done. And he's just a great guy to have. And, you know, it's not just me. It's everyone who's known him in baseball talks about just what a – well, they knew he was going to be a manager, and they knew he was going to be a good manager. And he has worked well, not just with helping develop these young guys, but turning these young guys into a winning team earlier than they probably thought they were going to be.
Yeah, Scott, I don't want to keep it too long. I appreciate your time. That's Scott Merkin of MLB.com. White Sox take on the Rays at 3:10 today. Scott, thanks for the time.
I just want to throw one more thing in. I wrote a story with Ozzy today for the newsletter, which talks about the amazing, you know, kind of rise from when he first came to the United States to where he is now. And it's an interesting talk. I mean, everything with Ozzy is always interesting, but I thought of that when you mentioned that 1 week from today, jersey number 13 is being retired.
Yeah, you're right. And that'll be a great day at the ballpark for White Sox fans. So, all right, Scott, thanks for the
time. Good. Okay, thank you. Take care.
That's Scott Merkin, MLB.com, White Sox beat reporter. We do have lineups in for the White Sox and Tampa Bay Rays. White Sox is very similar to what it was yesterday. The only thing they've switched out is Edgar Caro is catching today instead of Drew Romo. He's batting ninth. It's Antonacci batting first, and then the powerful trio of Mutataka Murakami, Miguel Vargas, and Colson Montgomery, 2-3-4. Andrew Benintendi at the 5 spot today for the White Sox. Braden Montgomery at the 6 spot. Tristan Peters is in center today. He's batting 7th, and Chase Meidroth playing 2nd, batting 8th. For the Tampa Bay Rays, it's Yandy Diaz DHing leading off once again. Chandler Simpson, probably the fastest man in baseball. He's playing left field. Junior Caminero, the superstar, batting third, playing third base. Victor Mesa Jr. is in right. Johnny DeLuca is playing center. He's batting fifth. Ryan Vallade playing first base, batting sixth. Ben Williamson is playing second. Nick Fortes is playing catcher. He's batting eighth. And then Taylor Walls, one of the best defensive players in baseball, he's playing shortstop for Tampa Bay today. We'll preview that game coming up. And Sox fans, head to the ballpark on Sunday, August 9th, as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 1:10 p.m. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a Shoeless Joe Jackson bobblehead presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Or skip the lines and secure your promo at checkout with Guaranteed Promo. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. When we'll come back, we'll break down White Sox versus Tampa Bay. First pitch coming up at 3:10 on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
White Sox look to win their fourth in a row today. Treacherous path through the AL East this week and weekend. They took on the Yankees, stole the last two games of the series from them. They beat the Rays yesterday 6-1, and now they go into Tampa Bay again today. First pitch is slated for 3:10 p.m. It's Noah Schultz versus Drew Rasmussen for Tampa Bay, and Rasmussen has been really good this year. I mean, he's just a very good pitcher. 3.07 ERA on the season. Noah Schultz, Sox need a little bit more out of him. His ERA is up over 6. Jordan Hicks is going to be the opener for him today. We'll dive more into the matchup in just a minute. And White Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the Chicago Sports Ticket Package. The winner will receive two tickets to a regular season home game for the White Sox, Chicago Bulls, and Chicago Fire. Enjoy a full season of Chicago sports. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. White Sox yesterday extended their lead in the division to 3 games. They now hold a 3-game lead over the Cleveland Guardians and the Minnesota Twins, who won yesterday as well. And a couple of updates on some moves going around the majors. The Twins traded with the Orioles for Dean Kramer, a pitcher who historically has sat around a 4 ERA in his career, but this year it's ticked a little bit higher. He's dealt with some lower body injuries. And they also traded for reliever A.J. Minter from the New York Mets. So the Twins seemingly buyers at the trade deadline as we come up on the MLB trade deadline. So have to keep an eye on them, as they'll look to make some noise in the division and in the wild card here. But nevertheless, the White Sox lead now up to 3 games. A high water mark of 7 games over 500 at 58-51 as the Cleveland Guardians fall yesterday. Both Twins and Guardians 56-55 on the season. Drew Rasmussen, it's a tough test, but I think it's this week has been a test for the White Sox because they faced some of the top pitchers in all of baseball. Drew Rasmussen, Gerrit Cole, Cam Schlittler, and they've kept their head, and Max Fried, and Nick Martinez yesterday, who they scored 6 runs against. These are all pitchers who will be 1, 2, or 3 starters in top rotations heading in to the MLB playoffs. They're all stars. They're Cy Young candidates. The White Sox in the past week are going to have seen the top 2 Cy Young candidates in the American League in Rasmussen and Cam Schlittler. And they beat Cam Schlittler. They didn't beat Cam Schlittler himself, but they beat the Yankees when Cam Schlittler was pitching. So they've proven that they can hang with that top talent. They'll try to do so again today after crushing Nick Martinez and hitting 4 home runs against him. They won 6-1 yesterday. And White Sox fans, it's time to start believing, because this team has their most comfortable lead in the division so far, which they have led since July 4th. It's now up to 3 games ahead of the Minnesota Twins and Cleveland Guardians. And every single time the White Sox have a chance to prove themselves, they go out and do it. I mean, Will Venable pregame just a few days ago was saying they're done proving themselves. They've done that already. And that's how they feel in the clubhouse. We heard it from Scott Merkin. This team believes they can be a World Series team. They're done proving themselves. They believe they've done it. But if fans needed more proof, I think this week is it is about as good a proof as you could possibly get that the White Sox are legit and they will be contenders in October here. But they might need to make some moves at the MLB trade deadline, and a couple of dominoes are already falling. I'm going to take you through now the moves that we already know about, but it's not none of the big moves yet. I mean, Tarek Skubal hasn't moved. Freddy Peralta hasn't moved yet. None of these big moves, big dominoes have fallen yet, but we have had some minor moves that could affect what happens here. Camilo Doval was traded from the New York Yankees, a big league pitcher, to the Pirates for two prospects. You may be asking, why are the New York Yankees trading away a big league pitcher for prospects when the Yankees should be buying? Well, Doval has struggled this year, and the reports are saying the Yankees really tried to work with him to get it back this season, so they decided they're going to shed the salary, the $6 million that Doval is owed, and they instead are going to clear that bullpen spot, which should allow them to take in another bullpen pitcher or another pitcher and have a couple more prospects, which they could possibly flip. So keep an eye on that one. As the Yankees, we already knew they were going to be in line for another top guy, and in the bullpen, also Sox could need a bullpen guy, more likely a starter, though. The Yankees are going to need bullpen guys as well. So they may be competing and bidding with the White Sox for then. We mentioned the two Twins moves, and those are probably the two most impactful moves so far, with A.J. Minter going to Minnesota and Dean Kramer going to Minnesota. But other than that, the dominoes haven't fallen yet. The big one's going to be Tarek Skubal. And what Jesse Rogers said is the White Sox, not saying it's Tarek Skubal who they're going to go get, but the White Sox are probably going to be looking for a rental pitcher. Some names that could be. You could be looking at Freddy Peralta from the Mets, Clay Holmes, who's coming back from injury, but has been consistently a very good pitcher from the Mets, Robbie Ray from the San Francisco Giants. I don't think the Sox, and based on what Jesse's saying, are going to make a huge splash. It doesn't sound like they want to trade Bonimer or Hagen Smith or Billy Carlson, or they won't trade Rock Chalowski. But they may make some type of rental move where they can trade out of their top 15 prospects, top 20 prospects, but not necessarily a top 10 prospect. So look for a rental splash, but I wouldn't say look for a very big splash, and that's what we're getting from Jesse Rogers. And he said it too, though. He said, you never know what happens at these deadlines. Trade deadline is Monday. Dominoes are going to start falling these next 2 days here, and the White Sox could add, because right now, they're leading the division, and if the season were to end today, they would be one of the top two seeds in the American League with the Tampa Bay Rays, who they play today. And that's about as good of a position as he could possibly be in at this point. Getting that first-round bye in the playoffs allows a team to set up their rotation. They skip the three-game wildcard round, which is frankly, it's random, because who knows what happens in a three-game series in a baseball series. So the White Sox have provided themselves a tremendous amount of flexibility at this trade deadline, and if they keep adding on, there's really no reason they can't make a run in October, and they've proven it this week as they go through the AL East. A couple of quick notes before we get going here. Drew Thorpe made a rehab assignment on Thursday. He pitched four innings, so keep an eye on him. You'll remember Drew Thorpe. He's only about 26 years old, and he's one of the White Sox better pitching prospects, so Drew Thorpe could be coming back. Rock Chalowski will be making his debut with the Winston-Salem Dash this week. Winston-Salem Dash just posted that one, so Rock Chalowski will finally be making his professional baseball debut with the Winston-Salem Dash and the Chicago White Sox. White Sox fans, families eat free. Grab your family and head to the ballpark with the family pack starting at $21. Each family member gets one hot dog, drink, and chips, and a cookie. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. First pitch between the White Sox and Rays is coming up at 3:10. We mentioned Noah Schultz is the starter for the White Sox today, but it's going to be Jordan Hicks as the opener. So Hicks will pitch to start. Noah Schultz will come in after. Drew Rasmussen, one of the top pitchers in baseball, will go for the Tampa Bay Rays. White Sox beat up Nick Martinez last night, though, who's one of the better pitchers in baseball this season. They hit 4 home runs against him, put up 6 runs against him. We'll see if they can do the same against Drew Rasmussen tonight. And if they do, I mean, the momentum's going to continue as they just tear through the AL East. They split a series against the Yankees, took game 1 versus the Rays, and they'll look to keep it rolling with a 4-game winning streak. A big thank you to our producer, Nick Palazzolo, our executive producer of White Sox baseball, Brendan Riley. Brendan will join you in just a few minutes for White Sox pregame. I'm Jack McGrath, filling in for Jeff Meller. This has been White Sox Weekly. White Sox versus Rays coming up at 3:10.